Thank you. Sit back and join me in the opening treatment. We are so grateful to be here together this morning, to know that we are established in peace, in love, unity, and great harmony. We have released what has happened prior to this moment and are open and receptive to hearing whatever it is we need to hear. We are grateful for this moment, for this meeting place for each other, and for this wonderful teaching that allows us to learn, to grow, to change, and to do things beyond things that we have ever done before. We are so grateful. We release these words and we let them be. And together we say, and so it is. So today concludes our theme, At Home with Spirit. And this morning I want to talk to you about our wonderful teaching that promotes self-knowledge and our conscious spiritual growth as a path to returning to our innate wholeness. Not that we ever left it, but it reminds us of where it is. It reminds us that we draw strength as well as wisdom from the spiritual universe by looking within ourselves. I want to explore the four pillars of the Science of Mind teaching, but it's actually four aspects of our teaching, which is that it's practical, it's positive, it's passionate, and it is also personal. These are all aspects and how they combine to give us a higher point of view is something I want to look at. Gives us a higher point of view. It also allows us to be lifted up to a higher perspective of life. Because once we start to live from that place of a higher viewpoint, it becomes the only thing that really makes sense. So let's get right into it and start out with the first one, which is this teaching is practical. I think we would all agree it is a very practical teaching. Dr. Holmes said there's a power for good in the universe, and you can use it. He states in The Science of Mind on page one, the very beginning of the book, that the science of mind is intensely practical because it teaches us how to use the mind principle for definite purposes, such as helping those who are sick, those who might be impoverished or even unhappy. Each one of us should learn to become a conscious user of its power. Power already exists, but the existence of power is of no particular value to us unless we use it. This is not a come to church on Sunday, hear a nice message, you hope anyway, and then go out Monday and just live your life any old way you please. We certainly can't tell you not to do that or how to live your life, and we wouldn't. But we will tell you that there is a better way. As you know, we all feel very strongly in this teaching about the teaching portion of the ministry. Ernest Holmes said that the science of mind is a teaching healing order. Again, he never intended for it to really be churches. He intended it to be something that could teach people so that they could apply the principles to practical daily living and that they would heal themselves as well as heal others. By healing, he was referencing revealing the truth. Our classes are designed for spiritual principles and spiritual practices to be applicable to daily living. Otherwise, what's really the point? If we can't apply everything we learn and can't allow it to be incorporated in the way in which we live, it's really not very useful. The other thing I want to remind you, as you have access to a power for good, and the question is, are you using it? Are you using this power within you for a power for good? You might say that this teaching could be compared to a super deluxe Swiss Army knife. Most of us never use more than one blade. We could also compare it to a computer that has many, many, many programs, all kinds of wonderful programs, that we just never take time to learn. Those tools on the computer could perhaps make life easier for us. They don't do us any good at all unless we learn how to use them, and then, of course, unless we practice them. So it's exactly the same with spiritual principles. Spiritual principles may seem a little bit more of an enigma because we don't exactly know where they are. It's not something we can touch and feel. However, we recognize them when we begin to use them or not use them. And the other thing is, many people say to me, they've been to many, many New Thought churches, many Science of Mind churches. The question is, do we learn and then practice the principles after we go to a Sunday service? Do we kind of just feel better for a while, go on in life, and then do something else on Sunday? If we don't practice these principles, I can't stress enough, it just really isn't going to change your life. And that's why the emphasis is so much on classes, because then we must commit to a practical application of the principles in our lives. In the middle of the most difficult circumstances, have we actually trained our minds to stop and say, wait, I know that there is an answer to every difficulty. I know that right here in the middle of this, there is God and wisdom as well as clarity. And I'm claiming it right now. I'm always guided and I trust that guidance. I'm always supported and I refuse to believe in any false truth that would say otherwise. So we have to learn some sense of affirmative thoughts and speech to say to ourselves so that when we are in those particular situations that might be stirring up the gifts within us, we can get ourselves through it. The other most important tool we have is affirmative prayer treatment. Ernest Holmes created this in a very scientific manner. We, as licensed practitioners, take classes for almost 5 years just to become, or 4 years just to become a licensed practitioner. And we have treatment pounded into us so that it really becomes our automatic response. And many times you will hear people say, boy, this treatment stuff really works. Sure, if you work it, if you apply it, if you begin to use it, and not look at it as something that you fear. Anybody can do treatment, it's just to begin doing it. These tools all lead us to change our own consciousness. The way we're showing up for the world, which in turn affects the way in which the world shows up for us. So that's the purpose of all of this, to make changes in our life, to expand our lives, to not fear the endeavors or the goals or the things that we have chosen to do in life. There was an experimental psychologist whose name was Martin Seligman, and he said one of the most significant findings in psychology in the last 20 years, imagine that, the most significant findings in psychology in the last 20 years is that individuals can choose the way they think. We can choose the way we think. Now, I think we know that. I think we take it for granted that we can choose the way we think. But I think when it comes right down to it, that many times we choose a thought that not necessarily is one we want to experience. I think he was just echoing the philosopher and the father of psychology, William James, who wrote, "The greatest discovery of my generation is that a human being can alter his life by altering his attitude and mind." Altering your attitude and mind. Here's something that you could do right now while you're sitting here. Whatever is going on with you, alter it. Instead of giving into it, you can acknowledge it, look at it, and then make some sort of a promise or agreement with yourself. By the time you leave here, that has disappeared. That's healed. That is no longer an issue. See, use the tools that are sitting right in front of you to heal you. What are we always healing? We're always healing the mind. We're always healing cause. And somewhere there's a cause in mind a thought, a feeling, a belief that pops up. We grab onto it, and then we have a certain experience. The greatest discovery of William James' generation was that a human being, that means all of us, can alter our attitude and our mind. And this goes for anything. And then Dr. Holmes said, change your thinking, change your life. They were all echoing the same thing. They were echoing the master teacher Jesus, who said to the Roman centurion in Matthew, as thou hast believed, so it be done unto thee. We go back to that again. It is done unto you as you believe. Or perhaps, maybe it was even Buddha that everyone was echoing, who said 600 years before Jesus did, all we are is the result of what we have thought. All we are is the result of what we have thought. Whoever said it first doesn't really matter. What matters is that it teaches us how to think, that we can change our thinking, and then how to take this higher road or a higher point of view. And by that, I don't mean denial, but I mean rising above what appears to be the problem or the challenge or the particular situation and going to a higher point of view. Again, the most important point is it doesn't mean that we'll never have challenges, or if we do, that we should deny them. The Bible says, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, suggesting that yes, we may experience some dark times. But it's also suggesting that we needn't pitch a tent in the midst of them. And the key phrase, I believe, in this passage is walk through. Walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Or when you're going through hell, don't stop. Keep walking through it. Everything is a lesson. Everything has some sort of a message to give us. Every experience we have, and each thing that we attract to us. Science of Mind gives us practical tools to continue walking. So the second thing is that this teaching is positive. We wouldn't deny that. It certainly is a very positive teaching. But it's not just a positive, feel-good, mushy, sort of wash over yourself difficult issues. It's much, much deeper than that. And that's why the committed study is so important. Because if you just get the surface of something, yeah, it makes you feel better. You can alter your attitude. You can change a few things in life. But we look to God and then recognize that God is at the core of all, or we could just call it right thinking or correct thinking. And I don't mean right as in morally superior or better, but rather a way of thinking that works to bring about more love and more peace in our lives versus wrong thinking, which doesn't usually bring about more peace and love in our life. In our textbook on page 142, Holmes said, that which thought has done, thought can undo. Please remember that. That which your thought has done, your thought can also undo. He goes on to say that lifelong habits of wrong thinking can be consciously and deliberately neutralized. Merely to abstain from wrong thinking is not enough. There must be active right thinking. So you have a thought. You don't like what the thought is bringing you. You say, you know what? I'm going to release this thought that is bringing me heartache or a headache. I don't want it anymore. And I'm going to exchange it for a thought that says, all is well. I am whole, complete, and perfect. Whatever it is for you. So just abstaining isn't enough. We want to replace that thought with some sort of an active, correct, and right thought. He says we must become actively constructive in our thinking. Actively constructive in our thinking. That means the way you think about yourself, as well as the thoughts that you are projecting. New and wholesome ideas of life, vitality, and hope must be accepted and incorporated into the substratum of our mental life. He said we should take the highest thought that we have and then attempt to even enlarge on that consciousness until it embraces a more vital concept of reality. If one wishes to demonstrate prosperity, he must first have a consciousness of prosperity. If he wishes health, he must embody the idea of health all the time. And then he says, this is more than faith. It's the knowledge that we are dealing with law. We say that this teaching is positive because we know about the law of mind action. Thoughts held in mind produce after their kind. If you believe that you are in a locked room so firmly that you can't even try the doors to see if they're locked or if you could get out, the results are exactly the same as if you were in a locked room, although the truth is that you're free to go. Your belief is all that lies in between you and your freedom. Your belief is the only thing that lies between you and health, between you and prosperity, between you and the right and perfect relationship or job or career or profession or place to live. It's your belief that lies between you and whatever it is you desire. You all know how elephants are trained to be beasts of burden. But I'm going to remind us. So the trainer captures an elephant and tethers one of its legs to a giant tree with a chain. The elephant struggles and struggles to get free from the tree. It pulls and pulls at first against the chain. But then finally, after maybe several months of struggling, the elephant just decides to give up. And then the trainer ties the elephant with a rope and then repeats the same process. Later, the trainer can tie the elephant with something even lighter until finally he can take the elephant into the jungle where it labors uncomplainingly, tethered with the reed of the lotus flower. That elephant will not even think of making a break from freedom because it feels this little tug on its leg. The elephant is now trained habitually to believe that with that tug, it's captured. Aren't we a lot like that elephant? We have a belief in something that may be habitual, maybe something that we accepted as a thought or a belief before we even knew that we accepted it. Sometimes we're just trained to accept limitation. You just accept it. You don't question it, think that it can change. When we accept something like limitation, the truth is that it has no more power than our belief in it. The power is always in your belief. A lotus reed cannot restrain an elephant, except in one way, and that is by the animal's own conviction that it can. The elephant's belief, not the reed, binds him. If we're feeling limited or perhaps tethered in some area of our lives, we can break free at any moment. Now, you may be sitting here in a chair feeling very free right here in this moment. But as we begin to look deeper in our exploration of self-discovery, we discover that we are not free in many ways, that we are certainly attached to lack and limitation. We may be even attached to the opposition of what we truly want and think that we can't have it. We may think that we can't make a symptom disappear in our body. We might think that we can't take a leap from where we are to a higher perspective. We might actually believe that. And in that belief, then it stands true. If we are feeling that way, we're free to choose a new thought. Sounds simple enough. We're free to choose a right thought, and then we're ultimately choosing a new life. What does it take to do this? It takes discipline, it takes determination, and it takes practice, like anything in life. Now, we may not be able to move to the affirmative side of life immediately. It might not happen overnight. We all need a support system, and that's why I think we're foolish if we think we can do anything all by ourselves. It just doesn't happen that way. And I don't think there's any accident that that's the scripture in the Bible that says, please cast your burdens, toss them over here to me, and not try to labor over this and figure it all out yourself. This teaching can change your life for the better by teaching you how to look at an affirmative side of life. I say a higher point of view because it allows you to be lifted up, not into denial, but lifted above whatever it is you're looking at. And you all know that you have looked at something and had a very different perspective than maybe you did at another time you looked at something. Many times we can look at things and we can rise very much higher than we did when we looked at it before. We can even exchange in conversations with people and hear the same conversation and suddenly get a new perspective of that, maybe just because of our experience, maybe because we're more open and receptive, maybe it's because we're beginning to apply this principle ourselves. The other one is that this teaching is passionate. And by passionate, I mean that a life lived in true spirituality is a passionate and alive life. There's a certain amount of enthusiasm that is infused within us as soon as we begin this spiritual journey. It's different than sort of the mundane, relaxed way of life we might have been living before, where things are sort of just on automatic pilot. I think I've told this story before, but it certainly illustrates passion and the enthusiasm I'm talking about in referring to life. So there once was a farmer who had a female pig, and he decided that he really wanted to raise pigs. So he made arrangements with a farmer in a nearby town to breed her with this farmer's male pig. On the appointed day, the farmer loaded the pig in the truck, drove to the nearby town, and the breeding process occurred. The owner of the female pig said to the other farmer, "So how will I know if this is taken?" "Well," said the second farmer, "if in the morning she's walking around in circles in her pen, you'll know it took." So the next morning, the farmer looked out the window with a hope in his heart, of course, that she'd be walking around in circles, but what's she doing? She's wallowing in the mud as usual. So he loads her in the truck and takes her back to the breeder. The next morning, he looks out the window again and hope in his heart, only to find her again wallowing in the mud. The third time, he's now really, really frustrated. And he grabs her and he loads her in the truck and he takes her back to the breeder. The next morning, he doesn't even want to look out the window. He's looked out so many mornings and been so disappointed. He doesn't even want to know what she's doing. So he asks his wife if she would please look out the window. And he says, "Is she lying in the mud?" "No," says the wife. "Oh," excitedly, the farmer asks, "is she walking in a circle in her pen?" "No," says the wife again. "Well, if she's not lying in the mud and she's not walking in a circle, What in the world is she doing? Asked the very frustrated farmer, to which his wife replied, Well, she's sitting in the trunk honking the horn. So I ask you, are you sitting in the truck, you know, honking the horn about your great life and celebrating it in such a way? Are you really enthusiastically embracing the fullness of this gift of life that you've been blessed with to the point that you could just go sit in a truck and just honk your horn? You know, these are stories that allow us, first of all, to lighten up and then allow us really to get back to that playfulness of life. When life was fun, when there weren't so many burdens and responsibilities that have a tendency to, you know, drag us down. I know a lot of you have been going through many changes in life. Jobs, your family, moving location, and then all the other wonderful things that happen. Not that those things aren't wonderful. But I think it's important that we celebrate it. You know, you're such a gift to the world, and it's easy to forget that. It's easy to think that you're just like everybody else. But as we get into this teaching, we have an understanding more and more that we are so unique and such important contributions to the world just as energetic beings before we even get into our own individualized and unique expressions. But it's really important to ask yourself, am I really sharing my gifts with the world? Am I really doing that in a way that could be helpful to other people? It's fine that we have a higher perspective, but let's lift other people up so that they can have a higher perspective as well. How many of you have had conversations with people who have nothing at all to do with this teaching, who maybe are not so positive and affirmative about life, and you listen to their stories, and you listen to what they're going through in life, and you really do have compassion, and you understand all of it, and yet there's a part of you that wants to say, you don't have to go there, and you don't have to stay there that long. This is going to pass. It is going to be okay. But somehow you find yourself in this sort of fear mode. You don't want to say that because you don't want to take away people's feelings of where they are. You don't want to come across like you're being cold. And it isn't really fair to tell people, oh, just affirm over your negativity, it'll be okay, because that doesn't really work either. But I think as we go along in life and we keep really honking our own horn, we can keep remembering what Jesus told us. Just don't hide your light under a bushel. Let it shine from the mountaintop, wherever the mountaintop might be. You know, the mountaintop some days might feel as though you're in the basement, but you can still have a mountaintop consciousness even though you might physically be in the basement. Sharing your gifts of the world might also mean that you share about the teaching with people. That doesn't mean you cram it down their throat or you are proselytizing. I've never heard anyone feel like they were, you know, drug here and they felt so much worse when they left and, you know, we were, you know, hitting them over the head with the truth and, you know, trying to feed them Kool-Aid and they didn't like it. Most people come here and say they felt a lot better afterward and they did get in touch with something that was more passionate than they had before they maybe heard the word. I think that's an important part of our growth as well. We hear over and over again, if you don't share your gifts, you don't share your blessings, then they can't multiply, right? How many of you feel as though this teaching changed your life? How many of you feel as though it really was a gift and a blessing? How many of you feel and look deeply that it came just at the right time of where you were about to go? Yes? How many of you had really painful lives before you came into this teaching? How many of you changed that in just your perspective? You didn't deny it, but you changed your perspective about it. Was that transformational or not? See, if somebody hadn't shared that with me, I don't know that I would have come to church. I'm just not sure that this would have been a place I would have just naturally stumbled upon. Maybe I would have, I don't know. But I am grateful for the person who kept telling me over and over again, not once, twice, or three times. But you might find it very helpful to look into the science of mind. And it took me a long time to get up enough nerve to do that because it sounded really scary. Changing everything, just the word change, sometimes can scare people because people don't know exactly how to do it. They don't understand that there's really nothing to change. You just have to be open and change just naturally happens. I pray that you'll remember throughout the week about the pig at least, and maybe you'll see a picture of her in the truck just honking that horn in such joy, and that you'll remember that that's something that you could share with a family friend, a workmate, or just a friend, and start inviting people to come here, letting people understand that we have a podcast, that we have a website, and it might be something that would really help them. Look, if everybody doesn't succeed, nobody succeeds. It's great that there's a few of us feel transformation, but if the whole world isn't allowed to have that opportunity, not much is going to change because we need this to be a collective consciousness of change. Do you think this would be a good time? Don't you think it would be a good time? Don't you think it would be wonderful if you didn't know that there was another way and somebody you loved and really respected said, there's another way. There is another way. Wouldn't that give you some sense of hope? Wouldn't that give you some sense of, wow, maybe even I can do this? That's where I think we come in as good stewards. I'm a strong believer in sharing what worked for you. And when you do that, you not only get transformed again, but so does the individual that you're sharing with. I feel very strongly about this because I think as adults we become, you know, a little stitched up. We don't share much about it, or people have considerations that, you know, your family doesn't want, you know, you to drag them to church. But you certainly are wise enough and have enough clarity about this teaching to just describe to them what this is really about. It isn't about dragging you somewhere or forcing you to believe a certain way. This is about freedom. This is about the greatest discipline and philosophy I know of that allows people to be free, but still allows them to have a very disciplined path. I don't know of any other teaching that does what this teaching does. And I've done a lot of exploring in my life. I'm not saying that there aren't great teachings. I'm saying this is a teaching that works with any teaching or any religion. And that was really its purpose. Its purpose was to be a companion to people's religion. Dr. Holmes said, keep going to the Catholic Church, keep going to temple. We don't want to take your God away from you or your religion away from you or what you believe away from you. We want to give you something in addition to that that's really applicable, that is all about cause and God and spiritual principles so that your life will be even greater. That's the purpose of it. It's to enhance what already is and whatever your spirituality might be. Overcoming fears by trusting that there is this power or the one that works through you. I can't stress that enough. To remember in those times where you may feel exhausted or weary, you know what? There's a power within me greater than I am. I'm going to call it forth now. I don't know what to do in this situation, but there is a power within me that does. So I'm going to allow it to guide me throughout the day. And then listen. And allow yourself to really be guided. And that's what I mean when I say that this teaching is so personal. It's so very, very personal. There is a side of this teaching that goes so deeply within you that there aren't words to describe it. It's not something that you can even talk about. It's sort of like this internal baptism and communion all at the same time, where you get this complete sense of not even being who you were before. Holmes said it, textbook on page 88, under the heading, The Personalness of God. And this is what he said. We should think of God not only as principle, forever pushing forward into expression. We should think of God not only as principle, but something forever pushing forward into expression through you, because you are its vehicle. We should think of it as infinite person. In other words, if we merely think of an abstract principle or some mathematical law of cause and effect, we'll lose all the warmth and the color and the intimacy of this teaching. We should be very careful in abstracting the principle, not to forget the essence. Our personal relationship in and with the divine. That feeds us, that fuels us. There is no go-between. There is no intermediary. We get to have a direct relationship with the God of your being, whatever you choose to call it. Now, in our Declaration of Principles, Dr. Holmes wrote that we believe God is personal to all who feel this indwelling presence. Every one of you will feel a different relationship to that. When our awareness becomes more and more established in the truth, and I mean the spiritual truth, that we live in God as God, our awareness begins to expand, and it becomes the source. The psalmist wrote, "Whither shall I go from thy spirit, or whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend up into heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there shall thy hand lead me. Thy right hand shall hold me." That is a psalm of comfort and healing, so that no matter what you're going through, you know that the God of your being is there with you, guiding you, holding your hand, walking beside you. So there you have it. That is the practical, positive, passionate, and personal pillars and aspects of our teaching. Also, a sensible point of view. I want to leave you with a daily thought from the Science of Mind magazine from way back in 1998 that Reverend Jesse Jennings wrote. "I've discovered that a lot of things that didn't make the least bit of sense to me when I first encountered this Science of Mind teaching now make more sense than anything else before or since." Perhaps it would be a good idea to note this in our teaching materials. Dear student, please don't worry if this material contradicts all the other information in your head. You didn't believe most of that the first time you heard it either. The two examples are unconditional love and praying as though the desired result had already showed up. These new ideas seem to be putting the cart before the horse, if not dispensing with the horse altogether. How could I love someone without the guarantee of being loved back? How many of you used to live there? How could I love someone without the guarantee that they're going to love me back? That changes, doesn't it? And what if what I want is at hand? Why bother to pray at all? Am I deluding myself by saying my good is here when it so obviously isn't? And in that case, I love this, shouldn't I be praying for my sanity? So you see what does happen. It is a little funky, oh, just act as if, it'll be fine. But you see, your subconscious mind is just an acceptor. It doesn't argue or discern, it just believes whatever you tell it. And it certainly believes with whatever you feel with the greatest of power. So the truth is, there is sort of this like whatever sort of way of it, because you're just reprogramming like a computer mind. And you've just decided you're going to input different material that you than you input before. And then pretty soon, it builds up and it builds up, and these old recordings we have fade away, just like you've all done with many, many other things. If what I want is at hand, why bother to pray at all? Well, you don't need to bother to pray at all for anything if you don't want to. It's always a good idea, though, to put some sort of energy in the universe through the power of your word that affirms and declares what it is you're up to, because the universe is our faithful servant and we're more or less giving it directions. But still, what emerges from a steady practice of the affirmative life makes me almost forget there was ever a time when I felt I could not trust the universe. Love is the risk that brave people take. Love is always returned, often from unexpected directions. Isn't it true? Sometimes you give love in certain areas, but it doesn't come back in that area. It chooses another direction and another place where it comes back to you. All the good I could possibly imagine is already at hand. And prayer doesn't make that happen, but it guides my mind toward accepting that it is happening. You see, we need to keep opening and expanding our consciousness for greater acceptance of greater good. So science of mind moves from being a technique to a whole way of being, a whole way of being in our thinking, in our feeling, and acting as though the very best of everything is fully and magnificently already present. And then turning the next corner to find that, in fact, it is now. And that is a sensible point of view, is it not? That it is right now that you live from a higher perspective. Perhaps it is a higher caliber of thinking. Rather than looking at a situation, assessing it, and deciding that you know exactly what that means, is going to a higher and more sensible point of view. I have no idea what's going on, actually. All I'm doing is looking through a perception or a perspective. And it looks like that, but I don't know. Very rarely do we have the full story and the full history of something, right? So I leave you today with those thoughts again. What emerges from a steady practice of an affirmative life makes us forget that there was really any other way of life. So I urge you to practice this practice, and then to share your practice, to add some real passion to it, to not be afraid to express yourself, to go out there and to share who you are. Look, you share everything else with people. People share with me all the time the good that's happened to them, the latest dress that they got, the new tie, the new suit. Share that with other spiritual mates who are walking through this earthly existence the same way that we are, who are running into bumps and floods and all kinds of things. That's really what we accept when we find that transformation has changed our lives for the better. That's really our purpose. Aren't we here to make the world a better place? Well, has your world just shrunk to just you? Is it just your own personal world? Because that's not what we were talking about. We were talking about making the world a better place. And you know what? I think it's great that you're prime examples of making the world a greater place. And I love the people who say, what is it that you do? You're so much more positive than you used to be, because there's my opening. Aha! You should come to my spiritual community, to my spiritual church. That's the opportunity. Sometimes we don't get that opportunity. Sometimes we have to go in a back door or a front door. But let me tell you something. Your life was saved. It may not feel like it was saved, but your life was saved when you came into this teaching. Because there are no accidents and there are no coincidences. And you just don't know where you might be without this teaching. It gives me chills to think of where I might be. But every time I think of that, it allows me to feel free to share it with somebody, because just maybe a few of your positive, affirmative words or invitation could change an entire life. And it does. And I think I've all told you the story about early into the teaching when there was a woman who walked in and she was crying. And I happened to be a practitioner in training, and I was sitting next to her. And she cried pretty much all through the entire service. I've been there. I knew what that felt like. After the service, she wanted to have a practitioner session, and that's what we did at that time. And she said to me, I want to thank you for this, because I almost committed suicide last night. I was all ready. I had all the pills there, and I was ready to do it. And something happened, and this morning I was led here. Now, that's just someone I know about, and I'm sharing with you. But just think back about how many times you walked into a spiritual center or a church in pain, feeling as though you were hopeless or helpless, or maybe nothing could help you. Or maybe you brought in a burden of or from someone else. So I can't stress enough the importance of sharing, because that's really honoring the law of circulation, and it's really honoring the pillars of our teaching. So thank you very much. And don't be shy to invite people to take a class if you've ever taken a class. That's also life-changing. All right. You've had your lecture and your sermon for the day. Now, let's look over here at this area of prosperity. How many of you are working on expanding your consciousness of prosperity? Okay, so some of you, not so much. If you don't want to expand your consciousness of prosperity, just put your hands over your ears. You don't have to listen to this. Here's another thing that I learned when I came into this teaching, that money was about nothing but the law of circulation. It had nothing to do with how much you have, how much you make, or anything else. It all has to do with how willing you are to circulate, how willing you are to give yourself a raise, and then also perhaps a raise in your giving. I share that with you because it was an important thing for me, and it changed my whole outlook on money, prosperity, what that meant. So that being said, speaking of the law of circulation, a portion of your generous giving this morning is going to water.org. They believe that every human being deserves to define their own future, and that water makes that possible. Over the past 25 years, they have transformed more than 21 million lives with access to safe water and sanitation. Our tithe today will help them reach even more people. So that's where a portion of your giving will be circulated. Would you all please stand, hold your tithe in your hand. If you want to go to the center, please feel free to do so. The prosperity affirmation is the offertory number 8 in your program. Here we go. Divine love consecrates my gift. It goes forth to heal, to prosper, to support, and to bless. It is evidence of my absolute conviction that God is the source and substance of my supply. I joyfully release my gift, knowing that it returns to me, multiplied abundantly, and so it is. Sit back, Take a couple of deep breaths. And let's just remember how beautiful we are, inside and outside. No matter what has happened prior to this moment, you're a brand new consciousness, open, receptive, innocent, and free to be all that you can be, releasing and letting go of what was, and allowing yourself to enthusiastically, to committedly, in a very personal and passionate way, express the uniqueness that you are, all your gifts, all your talents, all the qualities that just you have, and then share them with the world so that the world really does become a better place for all of us. We give thanks in advance for a mind that is sound, a heart that's pure, for a consciousness of faith and not of fear, for all the health and vitality and energy and strength that we have in this body, for the wealth and the richness of the supply that is unlimited, and for the freedom of spirit to know who we are and that there is no limitation to that, that we express our creativity, and that this great law of mind brings to us the right and perfect experience, result, and manifestation. Grateful for this truth and the power of it, we now release this word. We give thanks. We let it be so, and so it is.